Hi, welcome to UCB's Long Form Conversations. I'm your host, John Frusciante. Sans Will Hines today, but of course, as always, is Sypha Sounds, the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast intern.
Good day to you.
And good day to you, my fine sir. How are you?
I'm good.
Oh, good.
Great, actually.
Oh, great. Good. And of course, Keaton, the intern, is in the background waiting for something to go wrong so we can leap into action and fix it. Yeah, Will and I can't be in the same room anymore. We had a falling out.
Oh,
over a very heated game of girl talk. We both tried to call the same boy, and things got ugly. And we just refuse to be in the same room anymore until we can, you know, patch this up and, you know, hopefully win the love. One of us will win the love of Johnny. Speaking of Johnny, this week's guest is John Murray.
Hello.
Hi, John.
I'm sorry. I tore you and Will apart. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. All right. You know, you're a hot commodity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I am. This actually, Will not being here actually furthers my theory that I don't think Will Hines likes me.
I don't think he does either. In fact, he specifically said when I told him that I booked you, he said, no, I can't make
that
it.
That sounds about right.
I said, you were free up until a minute ago. He said, something just came up.
Does he not like you?
No, I don't know if he doesn't like me. I just, you know, sometimes Will's hard to read.
I've never heard him mention you.
Exactly, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that I, you know, with me, I feel like that's, if you don't mention me, that means you don't like me.
Yeah.
That's how self-involved I am.
One time on the podcast, I said, Will, list all the members of Death by Ruru. He listed everyone but you, and I said, I think you're forgetting someone. And he said, no, absolutely not.
There you go. Well, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
That's really in keeping with it. So now that we got that really down on tape,
probably
Will Hines does not like me.
Yep, let the improv community take note that
there's
a huge beef between Will Hines and John Murray.
Like just his empty mic just staring here as a ghost reminder of how much he doesn't like me.
Yeah, honestly, even the microphone looks a little disapproving.
Exactly.
You know?
So.
So you are on Death by Ruru.
I am, yes.
You were a cast member of hit sitcom 30 Rock quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Still on Stone Cold Fox?
I took a brief hiatus. I'm going to be in the next show.
Okay.
So, which is gearing up, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You were in Death Wears Stilettos, running noir spoof comedy show.
Yeah.
We will get to all these things and more over the course of this interview.
Sounds good.
Right? That sounds good, right?
All this sounds, so far you got your facts right, sir.
We should just stop here before I get anything wrong.
No, have a good time. Thanks so much for having me. Bye-bye.
So let's start where we usually start. How the fuck did you get here?
What's
the matter with you?
That's a good thing. Actually, let's start this way. Where are you from in New Jersey?
Oh, I am from Union, New Jersey.
Union, New Jersey.
Originally.
All right. So
you're from New Jersey as well.
I am from
right?
New Jersey as well. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to talk about Bruce Springsteen for the next hour, guys.
That's
all right?
Fine. As long as we don't talk about Bon Jovi.
We're going to talk about the sands of the shores and the ocean.
Oh, God. Don't even get me started. I'm so heartbroken over what this summer is going to be.
Well, all the places you listed that got lost in Sandy, I knew exactly where you were
talking
about.
Yeah. I've told you this. My grandmother owned a house in Ortley Beach, right next to Barnacle Bill's and a block from Ortley Beach, which is now
not a thing anymore. Yeah.
All of the town of Ortley Beach is basically not a thing anymore.
Right. So all that's all down by me. And like I first ran improv when I was in Red Bank, and a lot of the same people that you ended up doing improv with.
Oh, what's the name of the group down there? I can't believe I forgot.
I can't remember.
Holy
the name
shit,
of those kids! I don't know.
I can't even remember the cafe that they used to. Right, there's a cafe in Red Bank that Matt Donnelly used to do improv with. I can't even remember their name anymore.
All those guys? Like I never performed with them, but I was all friends with them, and they'd all be like, "Oh, you should do this thing," and I was like, "Eh." I like would dabble in it, but I never got into it. And then college, the same thing. I dabble with short form, but never got into it. And then I graduated college. I went to school for acting, and I graduated college, and I got a commercial agent right away. And this is like the boring part of the story. Like, so basically, I came to New York. Everyone was like, "Hey, you're really funny. You should do comedy." And I'd be like, "Nah, like you should go to UCB." I'd be like, "Nah." I would just say no. I don't know why I was saying no so much to it. I even think I met Charlie Todd, who had the same agent as I did. We met at one of our agent parties, and Charlie was like super nice to me, and we had a really nice conversation. He's like, "Hey man, you should really think about taking a class." And I still was like, "Nah."
Why were you so resistant?
I think at first, I think I kind of always worried about it being too clicky.
Okay.
I worried that it was like kind of like this kind of like, what happens if I wasn't good enough? And then this kind of mentality of like, it was going to be this closed off community kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, I just always kind of felt that way about comedy. Maybe even like, oh, maybe it wasn't funny enough or something like that.
Maybe you weren't funny enough?
Yeah,
or, okay.
Yeah, you know, that kind of like, that kind of self-doubt.
Were you funny in high school or college?
Yeah, like I was always told, people were always like, you're really funny, you know, like, and you just kind of would be like, oh, I wouldn't take it as a defining character. Like, I had friends who would tell me that they were funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if you had that friend who would be like, hey, man, I'm the funny guy. Uh-huh. I do funny things. And you'd just be like, oh, okay.
Right.
And you'd be like, I'm the class clown.
No, around me, none of my friends did that because they knew I was the funny guy.
Okay, gotcha. I just would just kind of be like, okay. And then, like, I'd do my things and or, like, my antics, and they'd get laughs or whatever.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, there was, like, but I had some really strong personality friends who were like, no, that's my role. Mm-hmm. So then, I guess, like, what, it was 2004, I had gone through a tough time. My father had died, and I kind of was at this weird moment in my life where it's like my acting career was basically like I wait for by the phone for my agent to call me to go out on a commercial call, and like that was it.
Okay.
And I was like, I didn't move to New York to have like this type of career.
Yeah. So, let me ask you this right here. What type of career did you move to New York to
just
have?
A working actor. I still like even in college, like I didn't get on to the comedy thing. They cast me in a comedy on like the main stage. I went to Syracuse mm-hmm. University just to get the clarity of that out. And like I did a comedy there, and it was still like, so even the school I think was like, you're funny, and it still
right.
kind of was like, I just want like, I just these broad generalities, like I want to be an actor.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Didn't know specifically what kind of actor
what
you
kind
wanted
of
to
actor.
Be. You wanted to do movies or TV?
I wanted to do it all.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
I wanted to do it all, and I didn't want to close off any doors mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And so finally it was just like, I'm just sitting here being like, well, I'm not doing anything at all. Like, I'm so open that I've worked myself to stasis, like
yeah.
just like nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally was like, well, maybe I'll listen to all these people, all these nice agents and casting directors and people and people who have worked at the theater who were saying, hey, take a class.
Yeah.
So in 2004, I signed up for Level One with Owen Burke, and it just from there was just like, oh, this is where I should have been the entire uh-huh. time.
How soon did that realization sink in?
Oh, man, very quickly. I mean, like I would say, like, I would probably say, like, after the first class.
What do you think specifically did it for you? What do you think led you to?
Well, you know, here's the thing. To tie it back to college and how it kind of made sense. We used to do these scenes in college where it would be, like, let's say we do a Shakespeare scene, right? And
uh-huh.
you'd be, like, yeah, not really hitting the essence of the scene. So the teacher would be like, well, you're not understanding what you're saying, so why don't you do it in your own words? So basically, when you do a scene like that, you're basically improvising the lines
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. And I would do those in class, and I'd feel like so fucking great. I'd feel like, I'd be like, oh, that was really awesome.
Yeah.
So that first, like, Level One class and, like, that whole class felt like I got to do 8 weeks of just that part.
Okay.
And I didn't have to worry about the part where I'm like, oh, I have to really, you know, conquer the language or study this and that. It was just like, no, I just get to play the scene. I just get to straight do that, and I get to pretty much say whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of was like, and I feel like when you start talking about game and stuff like that in there too, those parameters are already in there as well of like, let's say, like how I said, like you're using a Shakespeare scene, like the parameters of the scene you need to follow are set with the game.
Right.
So it felt like the same thing.
Okay.
So really, that's where it really like locked in. I felt, I was like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
This is really good.
And your, all of your the beliefs that you had about like, oh, maybe I'm not funny enough or it's too clicky or whatnot, that those
went away real quickly. A lot of that has to do like, Owen, this is the nice thing about this podcasting, and also talk about people that are great here at this theater and how fantastic they were been to me and how it's
yeah
nice
please
to,
do yeah
it's just like Owen was a very inspiring Level One teacher. He was a very nurturing, nice guy
mm-hmm.
In that setting, and this is outside of class, but I saw him at an audition after our class was over, and he had said to me, he's like, look, you were really good in the class, you got to keep doing this. And like that was the kind of encouragement where you hear like, I think he's super funny, you know, and maybe want to take it more. And also, he broke down like all those reservations, like where I was like, well, it's such a click now that I have my friends in my class, but I can't go to this Harold Knight thing. This just sounds so intimidating, and everyone there will know each other, and I'll just stick out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
And finally, like, Owen was just like, if you haven't seen a show yet, he's like, you're not doing your full job in this class. It's like, you got to go see a show. because seeing makes you better because great artists steal. And it's the truth. It's really the truth. And I would, so then I finally was like, all right, I'll go to Herald Night. And like, I didn't go to Herald Night and feel left out. I actually had quite the opposite feeling sitting in the audience at Herald Night. I felt like we were all included, that you were seeing your fellow classmates in the audience. You were seeing these performers who are doing the show for you, you know, and you were wanting to see them succeed and stuff like that. So it was just like all communal, you know. It was like it suddenly was just like, no, like the yes and mentality just bleeds through, and that it's like it's not clicky. It's like they want to include anyone. If you don't get included in this community, I think it could be because like you might need to look at yourself first because there's some issues. Because I think that this place is so accepting for everyone.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
Were you doing any practice groups? Like once you got into it, did you get into any kind of practice groups?
Yeah, I did. My level one, by the end, we had a practice group going. I know Darcy Carden was in my level one, and stuff like that. And we always talk about how Duncan Sheik was in that level one
right. Yeah.
I actually went to high school with Duncan's brother, and I got to reunite with Duncan, Pete Sheik, through seeing Duncan, which was nice.
Nice.
Real boring story. but yeah, we started practice groups around then. Mm-hmm. My level two is when I think I really started to meet people that I would perform with on a regular basis to turn that practice group into an indie team. I took level two with Brian Husky. Mm-hmm. I'll list all my teachers. Who cares?
I don't care.
Okay. Kevin Mullaney was my... level three, and then I think it was Billy Merritt. Then I think I took a Christina like 504 or something.
Christina
like that.
Gassis.
Yeah, Christina Gassis. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
And Michael Delaney, and then I think I took an Anthony King after that.
Okay.
So those were all my teachers. But around like the Husky, when I was taking class with Brian, I met some people. Rob Dubin, who's a writer for Colbert now, and Lex Morales, and those guys, and they started to be like, you know, let's start working towards, you know, getting stage time because we really enjoyed this. We really enjoyed performing as in class, and we're like, we want to do more of it.
Okay.
And so we kind of kept working our way up the levels and stuff like that. And around, and then we were like, we just formed this indie team, and that's when Under St. Mark's was still a big deal.
Okay.
And Chris Kula coached us, and we were called Dwayne's Guest House, and we got these two other, we got Frank Campanella and Greg Wilker in there.
Oh, yeah. I remember all those guys.
All those guys.
I remember Dwayne's Guest House.
Yeah, because also another thing that's funny between you and I is that we know a lot of the same people from New Jersey that we perform with. But you and I basically came up at the same time through the second time around through UCB.
Oh, okay.
For you. Second time around for you.
Uh-huh.
But you and I were pretty much like contemporaries.
Oh, we were. I never really realized that.
If you would, because when Bastion got made, you were the only other person that got placed on a team after that audition.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, because then I think you had...
That I got placed on Trucks.
Trucks. And that was through... You had performed with Project Improviser,
I think.
And that's how that got noticed for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'm doing the Will Hines facts. Is that cool with everybody?
Yeah. You're reminding me of my own life.
Exactly. John, I've stalked you.
Oh, thanks. Everyone on the team.
On Trucks, I can't do that.
So what do you think you were, from the best of your memory, what were the kinds of things you were bad at? What do you remember like struggling with or being bad at?
Connections were super hard starting off. I remember one of my teammates being like, quit trying to connect everything.
You would aggressively try to connect.
Yeah,
things.
You'd just be like, all right, let's like try to tie this all up, you know?
So when you say you were bad at them, you mean you just like were clumsily trying to tie everything.
I was the mayor of Connection Island. I
Why would an entire island have a mayor?
I don't know.
Why wouldn't they have like a president?
Because I was connecting it from something else. I mean, or if you prefer, like the Dr. Thoreau of Connection Island, whatever
makes
you
more
need,
sense.
Whatever
it just
you need,
doesn't make sense. That an island would have a mayor.
Still have a lot of problems with
logically,
it.
Logically, it doesn't jive.
So yeah, it was kind of a nightmare on that scope.
You're sort of like the Jacob of Connection Island.
Yes, yes, you know? Exactly. That's very true. Yes,
I know. I said that because I know. Here's another thing we have in common: is we're both Lost fans, right?
Yes. I enjoy Lost. Yeah, I do.
How do you think you got better at that? How did you address that? Was it just over time, or
I think I stopped trying to connect everything. Like, I know that sounds like real simple, but I think I pulled back on that, and I think it's just a matter of like, I think a big note for myself, and it's something that I still to this day kind of have to remind myself about is like, just do less. I mean, like, from everything. I mean, I've performed in other shows where, you know, I felt like I'm like, you get a little bit like where like, man, I was out there too much. And it was like, you can kind of bulldoze a little bit, you know, because you're having too much of a good time.
Yeah.
There is like, it's hard to express, but there is kind of some aspect of it like where it's like, you can have too much of a good time to the point that like it kind of ruins it for everybody else. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And it's a matter of gauging that, making sure that you're feeding the right amount into the show.
It also makes sense you saying like you just did less. I think that is practical advice.
Yeah.
I think it is like sometimes, sure, you need to go out there and swing the bat a little bit more,
right.
Take like 50 jump shots in a row, but then sometimes it's just let me relax. Sometimes,
exactly.
You know, you're trying too hard to do something.
I like to look at it sometimes as like where some shows where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to, you know, try to like maybe like you look at one thing like I'll initiate in this show and or I'll just support in this show. Like of how like what's the role that you're going to play on in this show and feeling that out as it goes along, I think is an important thing to realize because not every show you're not going to be like the unusual thing in the middle of every scene. You know, you're not going to be like, oh yeah, that guy played the hunchback, the guy with the eye patch, and that guy who was that great lover.
Mm-hmm. And, all classic stock improv characters for you.
Exactly. Dude.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Those are your three favorite characters.
Yeah, they're also the classic stock characters of Commedia dell'arte as well.
That's
a guy
true.
With an eye patch, the hunchback, and the great lover.
The great lover, yeah.
But, you know, it's like there's moments where you're just like, no, I'm just going to, like where you, if you walk away and you're like, I was a great waiter in that scene and I set up the environment that my scene partners maybe didn't have established yet or whatever, like, boom, like you've done your job so much more there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I was telling some of my students recently, I did a show where I think maybe the biggest thing I did in the show is I played a vagina. You know, I just like was hands on someone's crotch playing a vagina.
Uh-huh.
And I got more compliments about my vagina work on that show than like, wasn't like, oh man, that scene was great. It was like, hey man, great, great vagina work. That was hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like.
You got a role in a Spielberg film.
I did.
Vagina work, vagina. Right?
I did.
So what was your first Herald team?
My first Herald team, my first and only Herald team was Bastion.
Oh, it was Bastion, right?
Yeah. No,
okay.
That's a fair question.
And Bastion was a pretty great Herald team.
It was great.
You know, still pretty legendary Herald team. What was that like being on Bastion for you? And you were on it from the beginning,
I was on it from the beginning. Mm-hmm. I was one of the original members. Well, I would like to say this. It took me 3 times to get on a Herald team.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that.
So I missed out on, what is it? Beatrice was the first audition.
Okay, you said you missed out.
Just like I didn't make it. I think
or?
I was called back.
Okay.
I didn't do that. I wasn't called back for that. And then I was called back and I didn't make it. And then Tantrum, I was called back and I didn't make it.
And how did that feel?
Like deserving. Those callbacks were bad. I choked. I tried too hard.
Okay,
to kind of go back on that. I really I pushed it and I didn't let things organically happen within the scene. And that audition process, I think that can happen.
Did you want it so bad that you just pushed
it
hard?
Yeah, I did.
I think that's a thing that we see a lot or that people do a lot is like, oh my God, like I know I do it. I've done it in situations. I've done it in auditions. It's like, I want this so fucking bad. And then you just trip over your own ass.
Yeah, I think that might have been, I wanted it really bad. I think there was also the fact of like, you're playing with people you don't know who all really want it so bad.
So it was their fault.
Yeah, it was their fault. Exactly. Good, thank you. I'm glad that I could get that on tape, the blame of everybody else. But, you know, it's just like it's like everyone's on a heightened like thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like where you're like a little bit kind of like going in there kind of gunslinging a little bit more than like, oh, let's go in there as this team where it's like, you know, this kind of like, even though you're trying to be like, we're playing together, you're also kind of thinking like, oh man, like, I gotta shine.
Yeah.
So I think that some of that might have gotten the better of me on that.
Sure.
Did
you hunchback when you should have eye patched, or did you?
I didn't know. A lot of world's greatest lover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Always my fallback move. Which is really weird.
Yeah, too much of that will fuck you in an audition.
Oh, it's weird. Especially when I just like leave my scene partner, come up to the auditioners being real sexy.
Totally like breaking the fourth wall, right? Yeah, no, that's... Yeah, you should probably never have been put on a Herald.
Nope. But, I mean, there's some things like actually with the auditioning process. Like, I know that a lot of students listen to this, so I actually kind of want to talk about this.
Please.
Is that... Like, I auditioned 3 times, and I know there's people that have auditioned way more than me. But I think that... I would have kept auditioning. I mean, for me, I always think about this really story of, that Harvey Keitel has with the Actors Studio. Have you guys heard that story?
I'm not sure.
Kind of pretentious story, but I'll tell him anyway. It's like he basically like kept auditioning for the Actors Studio, and they like weren't going to let him in. And I think like on like one of his like last auditions, someone turned to him like, "Well, this guy keeps showing up. We're just going to have to like let him in, you know?" And I mean, like Harvey Keitel is an amazing actor, and he's a great job and stuff like that. But I feel like. That I took that story as like tenacity, and I was like, I'd get a call back, and that was a great feeling, and I would know that maybe my callback was not right, but so I'd go back into the class system and work on stuff to get myself feeling like I'm working towards that again, mm-hmm. you know, and then the other realization that I had in that audition process. And I'll clarify this, is I started to look around and I started to be like, you know what, like there's a guy in the corner who I've never met and I've never taken a class with.
Right.
And I thought to myself, like, that's not helping me. And this is kind of where some of my acting school kind of training came in, and where it was like, why don't I go take a class and learn from that guy and see what he has to say, so that like when I do go into that audition, I'm using like techniques that he's looking for, mm-hmm. and he knows who I am and he knows my body of work.
Sure.
And I even looked at that when I took my original teachers. If you look, Owen Burke, Kevin Mullaney, and Anthony King all were artistic directors at one time of the theater, and I did that on purpose, mm-hmm. because I was figuring out like these guys are the voice of the theater. They're the comedic voices that define the work and shows that are being put up. So why wouldn't I want to take a class with these people so that I am working towards that kind of goal? Mm. Is it yours?
Yeah, I have my hand up.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
On the other side of that,
yeah.
Do you think, or I know that I would get scared to take a Nate Dern class?
Yeah,
because what if I did bad in that class?
You see, that the one thing that I would say with that, and this is what I want to clarify, is that I never went in there with the mentality of this is going to, me taking this class is going to get me something out of it. You know what I'm saying? It's right. Like that's the hard thing you have to remind yourself is not get caught up in the politics of you know, institutions,
the organization. Yeah.
Where I was just like, it doesn't matter the work I do. It just matters what I learn.
Right. I think that's a really important distinction and a line to draw. That like you're not, your class, no class that you take here is an audition for anything.
Exactly.
But I think what your point, I'm just going to restate what you just said, is that like you were like, I want to take a class from this person to just learn what their approach is, where they're coming from.
Exactly.
And like get some of the like voice of the theater.
Yeah.
You know, some of like try to get sort of the purest kind of voice of it.
I think that you can't look at it as being opportunistic. That's not what it's about.
Nobody says like, oh, that person was terrible in my class, so like they don't get a fair shot in an audition.
I think I think that actually,
or anything else here.
And I think that I would even say, man, if people are more going to be positive for you for anything than negative with that audition process, anything
from
when I've sat on, anyone's always been like, man, he just had an off day and stuff like that, which is
absolutely. That's a great point. Is like, first of all, as has been said countless times, like we want every single person to be amazing.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, it would make our jobs really fucking hard, but like that's what we want.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there have been so many instances of like, oh yeah, that person is really great. This just wasn't
right.
Like, they didn't bring it in this audition today, but they have this great, you know, I've seen them do great things.
So it's something. Yeah. So it's hard. It's a fine line. But I had already, like, the theater that I went to school for is actually reminds me of UCB a lot. It's a very communal place and stuff like that. So I just really looked at. I knew to look at the audition and the school as two separate things. Mm. And so that's what the mentality I went into those places. And especially, it's kind of funny you said to take that. My Anthony class was not the best class. Anyone who was in that class, I'm sorry. But I mean, really.
I had a similar experience.
You know, he basically put it in my feedback where he was like, this class was a disaster. But we still had a good, like, working relationship out of that class. We still had good give and take, and I felt like I learned something from it.
Yeah.
So I think that if you were scared to be like, oh, I'll take that with this, and it doesn't work out, I think that you'll get out of what you need it. You know, it's like I would never think that, like, anyone would do a bad job or the class would take you down with it and stuff.
It is a completely understandable feeling to have.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely understandable. It's like, oh, this person is a higher up at the theater, and I'm taking a class with them. I better be good.
Right.
But it's like, it's okay to release yourself from that feeling.
I almost think that's kind of also the challenge of being like, well, I want to go and do someone that's a higher up or something like that. Maybe I want to go in and do my best work in there or face that challenge. A lot of it, I think, with this too, like, you know, it's like taking that Delaney class for me was like, boom, I'm facing, I've heard so many stories. I'm facing the challenge of taking that Delaney class. Yeah. And I have to say that Delaney class was like a life changer for me. That was an improv life changer.
How so?
I had a kind of a small like kind of breakdown in the middle of that class where I was like, what do you want from me, you know? And Delaney was basically like, towards him, yeah.
Okay, in class?
In class,
really?
Yeah.
Over what? Like, what was the, how did it come about?
Well, I guess I can't remember the specific scene. Mm-hmm. It just was like this moment of like, I just basically was like, I'm trying my hardest, you know?
And he was giving you notes? Yeah. And like,
it just felt like, I felt like there was like, I couldn't reach the summit, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And Michael afterwards was like, basically like, he's like, don't, he's like, and this is what I say to my students now too. It's like, notes aren't a bad thing. The reason you're getting these notes is because you're taking chances. You're making big moves in this class. And through that, you're helping your fellow classmates learn. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm not trying to tear you down with these. I'm trying to build you up. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, That was important for me to know, and I think we're just discovering I have self-confidence issues through this, but I think that, you know, where I was like, oh, that's interesting, and I think that also, that kind of little outburst, I think also like cued Michael into me a little bit, like cued Delaney into me a little bit, that where it's like we were able then to have like a more intimate teacher discourse. Mm-hmm. And from there I really felt like that class like blossomed for me and stuff like that.
So that was like you said, a breakthrough.
Yeah, it was just
being
a breakthrough.
Able to have that conversation.
Conversation,
like,
yeah.
You felt freer and you felt freer, like you understood it a little bit more.
Exactly, yeah. You know, of just being like, okay, yeah, it's in what we're working towards and stuff like that. I don't know. There was just something about that moment between the two of us that really felt like it made me a better improviser.
Let me ask you this. I want to go back a little bit.
Sure, sorry.
You said, it's okay. You said that if you hadn't gotten on a Harold team, you would have kept auditioning,
yes,
probably. Why?
Why?
Yeah. You could go anywhere, you know? Why a Harold team? Why this theater?
I just always liked how this theater treats... I come from an acting background, so I always loved the way this teacher treats actors. I love the way that this theater helps people be seen. Mm-hmm. And Harold Night, to me... was great. It was a sold out house every night. Mm-hmm. And it just like I said, I went and I just loved the community. I loved the vibe of that night. Mm-hmm. And I loved the, I liked the form a lot. I thought I still like the Herald, but I was so infatuated with it by then. Mm-hmm. That I just felt like it was like, this is where I want to be seen.
Okay.
And I decided that like, that's where I want to work. I mean, to me, I guess, there's a lot of talk going on around right now about how to look at the theater and how to look at the school and all this, mm-hmm, kind of stuff like that. And some people have compared here to a grad school. And I would say that that's a true statement. For, mm-hmm, me, I definitely feel that UCB, through classes and into Harold Night,
right,
was definitely a grad school like.
And we
experience.
Can say that there, the day that this is being recorded, there was an article put out in the New York Times.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Giving the theater a little bit of a short shrift, and the writer of the article barely concealed his bias.
Right.
Where previously it would have been thought that there wasn't one.
Right. But I wouldn't.
So I'm not going to, as you can tell from the way I'm choosing my words very carefully, I'm not going to talk about it because I'm too emotionally invested in it.
Right.
But you can feel free to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't slant anything. I'm not slanting anything I'm saying today to fit those parameters. Like, this is how I felt about this school to begin with. There was a moment, I think even my wife turned to me and she's like, this is basically grad school for you. This is basically, I studied acting in college and now this is me kind of fine honing and making the kind of acting I want to do more specific.
And so getting on a Harold team for you was part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at no point did you think, it seems like, at no point did you think, like, well, if I don't get on a Harold team, if I don't make it through this audition, I'm just going to take the education that I got so far and go off and be an actor with it.
No, I, like, I, for me, it was like, you, like, I, the another thing that UCB exposed to me is that like I feel more comfortable in a theatrical setting. Like I said to you in college, like the theater department is this close knit thing. I'm actually going up to Syracuse next week with Torco, and I'm going to get to speak to the department. And it's because the way it works is that like each Wednesday, the whole department gets together for like this kind of like all department meeting. And if you remember, the theater actually used to have, this theater used to actually have all department meetings as well.
Yeah.
We don't do them with super regularity anymore, but we did them. And I was like, this all makes sense to me. Like the way the theater works as like a theater quote unquote organization, that was like mentality. So I was like, no, this is where like I want to work because I understand the inner workings of it. So I didn't feel like I'd be like, it just didn't feel right for me to be like, yeah, I took going in an audition and be like, I took classes at UCB. That didn't feel right to me. It felt like I wanted to be like, I'm a performer at UCB. I work at UCB. Like, this is, like, I felt at home there in more ways than one.
Sure. So you were on Bastion.
Yes.
You guys were a super close-knit group, right? You went on ski trips together. You practiced, like, twice a week, right?
Yeah, we practiced twice a week. I don't know about ski trips. We never could get the ski trip to work.
Oh, I thought it actually happened.
We had it set for a weekend, and then it's... Really, that's a good memory, John. It snowed. It snowed, and we couldn't get out.
Okay.
But, yeah, I mean, Bastion is... We're still close. I mean, like, there's now, I think, 11 in total of all of us. And, I mean, there are 11 people that, like, any party I'd have, they're in the...
Okay.
Top 20 of who's getting invited right there.
Something here that I some people know this, but I don't think I've talked about this publicly.
Yeah.
I was on, I think, Trucks at the time that you were, that Bastion was around.
Yeah.
And I hated you guys. I had a real like Harold Knight rivalry in my head going on, like, because you guys were great.
Yeah.
You were always getting the anchor slot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I felt very competitive with you guys. I like wanted to be better than
you. We never noticed.
Well, I wouldn't have made it publicly.
Okay. You know, all right, good.
Known.
All right.
And it's also not like a big deal. And of course, looking back on it, it's like, what, you know, who gives a fuck? I think it's a common thing, but that was, you guys were my, like, we have to be better than
they are.
So what made you guys, in your mind, what was so great about Bastion, and how did you get there?
Well, first off, like, you know, sometimes a lot of people be like, oh, man, I've been cast on a team, and I have no commonality with these people. Out of random casting for... eight people, like, we were so like-minded. It was just a huge like-minded group of people. Eight people that, like, just really fit.
Did
like,
you know
like,
that right away? Did you get that sense right away?
Right, I think so. First or second rehearsal, we're all just like, well, like, this weird things, similar backgrounds.
So Bastion is you, Adam Frucci, Molly Lloyd, Brian Barrett, Oscar, Magallanes,
Lydia.
Lydia.
Maggie Carey.
Maggie.
Yeah.
And...
That's the original. That's
I have seven people or eight people.
And then I would be the eighth, right?
You.
Oh, did we say me?
So you, Oscar, Brian, Maggie, Lydia, Molly, Frucci.
You say Brandon?
Brandon.
Brandon
yes.
Gardner, yes.
Brandon Gardner.
Okay, Brandon Gardner. So yeah, that's the original eight. And like, you know, we...
Those people are so like... It's like... Those people are so well known now, and they're all so good that like I forget that they were all on a team together. That's why I have trouble like remembering that. Like, oh yeah, all these great people were on the same Harold team.
Yeah, it's great.
No wonder you guys were so good.
We're just so good because there's so many good people on that team.
Yeah,
the backgrounds were similar. One, I mean, like we all one day were just talking. We're like, everyone went on the circle. And we're like, all our parents are married. I don't like. I mean, that's like a small thing, but we're all like, okay, like all our backgrounds were kind of similar. We then would set up these rehearsal times where we were rehearsing two times a week, and then we did all like things that people kind of consider tropey when you're on a team. But we like did book clubs. We did like Christmas parties. We just did all this stuff that kind of like intertwined ourselves to each other's lives that I think that really set up a great group mind for the rest of the team. And then as time went on, we started to play like a lot of different roles for each other in the team. Like I never was super like, we got to get anchor, we got to win cage match. You know, like I enjoyed the benefits of all those things. Not benefits, but you know what I mean? I enjoyed the getting that, you know?
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think that Brandon, for instance, comes to mind. I think he was very much more good at getting us kind of focused on those type of things.
Sure.
And making us do that, you know, where maybe my role was just kind of to be like, you know, like I, like Oscar and Brandon have told me in the past, like I was the heart of the team, you know, and stuff like that. We all kind of played different roles for each other that kind of made that team work so well.
Sure.
And then we were very conscious of when a member left to go on to better success of filling this, that with someone else who would kind of keep that role alive.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how it worked. I mean, we just like we all wanted to be great. Mm-hmm. But we once again, I give some credit to Anthony King. I'm glad that I can on this podcast and do it. Anthony King gave us a great note where he's like, also give yourself permission to fail spectacularly. Mm-hmm. And I think that that note was very important to Bastion because we were a group of people that were so kind of like, we want to be great. It's got to be the best all the time. That to give ourselves to go for something, maybe have it not reach where it needs to be and kind of fall down.
Yeah.
And be okay with that, I think was important to us to kind of keep
building
stuff.
An important note just for everybody, you know, like just to be able to fail spectacularly.
Yeah, it's huge. Like, you don't hear it enough.
I mean, if I had the capacity to fail at things, I'm sure it would be a great note for me too, you know, but I'm not like, you know. It's we all need to be able to do that, especially doing comedy and doing fucking improv.
Right.
Where, as I say to students and say to a lot of people, like, it's a fucking miracle it ever works.
Right.
Given the nature of what
exactly.
it is. You know, so, like, you really have to give yourself that permission.
And it's a domino effect because it's like you fail spectacularly, and then you think about what Delaney said to me, just to use my examples, is that, like, then it's like you got to be okay that you took the chances but still get the notes for that.
Yeah.
And not take those notes as, like, ah, oh, I really did wrong here. I really screwed up. I really destroyed what I did everything wrong. I should quit. Mm-hmm. It's not that. You took a chance. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out. Yeah. Here's the ways to fix that. So it's all positive. It's all built to build it back up. So the next time you go out, it's going to be better.
Is that something that you feel a lot or have felt that, like, oh, I screwed up so badly or, you know, like I'm a failure or anything like that?
I think, I get down. I in the past have gotten down on my work when it isn't what I think it should be. I mean, there's you know, I don't show it to, like, you know, people. Like, you wouldn't find me backstage, you know, like punching a mirror or something like that. You know what I'm saying? You know,
look at me.
Saifa, you're just like.
Saifa, we've had to replace a lot of mirrors. You know how many mirrors we've had to replace
but,
since
you know,
you've come around.
My wife, like, you know, God bless her, is definitely has to hear, like, when I'm not happy with something I've done, you know? So. It's like these kind of things are where over my years of experience have been like kept me in check instead of going home and being like, oh, completely miserable for a day and a half, being like, Jesus Christ, like, what am I doing? To kind of be like, you know what, man, it's like you took the shot, it didn't work, let's get back on it and try it again and take what we can learn from this experience and move on.
I have like so many things that I want to ask you about and talk to you about. I feel like I'm going to have to pick and choose with the amount of time that we have.
Okay, I
and
can
also
be here.
I might skip around a
little. Sure, okay, that's fine.
I want to, first of all, I want to talk to you a lot about acting stuff because you've done a lot of, acting.
Yes.
You know, professional acting. But I want to skip back to almost the beginning of this interview to something that you said that stuck out to me. You said you got out of college and you got an agent right away.
Yes.
How did you do that?
Oh, I should clarify. I was a commercial agent, and I got it because my college put up in a showcase, and I got signed from there.
Okay.
And that's how I got it. So I did like two scenes, and
they invited a bunch of industry.
Industry
saw you,
and I got signed right away. Yeah.
Did a lot of people from your class get signed right away, or was it?
Yeah,
like,
did pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you had somebody right out of college that was like
sending me out for
audition.
Commercials. Yeah, it was kind of weird to be 21 in the city with that and not kind of understand. Like, I could do a whole podcast about how I figured out that whole mess.
Uh-huh.
I like tripped around in that world for a while too, of being like, and once, here's something important is like classes, and that's another great thing about this place is just classes are a great thing. They keep you sharp, and like took plenty of commercial classes to finally unravel what I'm doing in the room there too, you know? So
okay, so you were put on Ruru from Bastion. Right?
Yes, it was
only Harold.
Yeah.
So what was that like for you?
Unexpected. I mean, Shannon O'Neill, who coached Bastion forever, and Chris Gethard did as well. And I want to say on the podcast, I love them, and they're so important to my improv development and with that those teams. But anyway, to go back, so I asked Shannon. I remember when she was guesting on The Stepfathers, I was like, oh, hey, so do you know that this is going to happen? Do you know this is, you're going to get on the team? She's like, no. She's like, I'm just guessing, you know? And I was like, ha ha, you know. And then when it happened to me with Ruru, I was like, oh no, I totally know what Shannon's talking about. Like, you did, I didn't know. Mm-hmm. You just were like, it was like, Ruru's low tonight. I know Anthony. I know Neil. I know Gavin. You know, I know Gil. They just need someone. And Gamberling, you know, they just need someone. I'll go help out.
Right.
And then I'll go back to Herald Night, you know, and I'll be like, I've had that great experience on the weekend. And it wasn't until I had done it like two or three times that maybe Anthony made a joke and he's like, be good tonight. It's your audition. And, you know, and Mick Still and I were doing it. We kind of looked at each other and then it was like, oh wait, we've been as a prospect. And then it was suddenly like kind of like that scene in Jaws where like Roy Scheider, like you suddenly were like, whoa, you know, like realization.
Wait, which scene in Jaws?
When?
Because that's my favorite movie.
Okay, so when he's on the beach, the big shot where with the focus.
Yeah, the racking shot. Yeah.
That's kind of what it was like.
Where Alex Keating.
Yeah.
Right? Kintner. Alex Kintner gets eaten in his raft.
Yes.
And then you see Roy Scheider see it.
Yeah.
Okay,
when the raft goes down,
Okay, good. I just needed to
know where
you were coming
from. So that's kind of where it was. Where you're like, oh, wait a second. And then you're like, this is happening. So it really was an unexpected thing. But, I mean, it just made me a better player. And then you start to realize, you'd be like, why was it so unexpected? Gavin coached Bastion for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Neil and I had been working together for a year with Stone Cold Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony and I were spending up to 15 hours a day at 30 Rock in a green room together. You know, I mean, like I knew Gil through certain things. And I mean, the only person I really didn't know super well I had met in passing was Gamberling.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like four members of the team I knew very well and had worked with.
Now, this brings me to something else that I wanted to ask you about. One of the things that's always struck me about you is that you are a profoundly nice guy.
Mm.
You're very nice, very easy to talk to, like very welcoming, you know, very personable.
Right.
I know Will disagrees with that completely.
Oh, man, his ghost mic still staring at me.
So, like how there are a couple things I want to ask you about this. Like, how important is that? How, like, what is one question? Another question is, like, where do you think that comes from in you? This just, like, you're very affable and nice to everybody, you know? Where do you think that comes from?
That comes from, I think, that I enjoy pleasantry. I enjoy having a good time. So the perspective of me being nice to someone is that I like kind of, and maybe this is part's kind of the selfish part, I kind of want the same in return.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd rather us all have a good time instead of us having tension or me trying to, you know, alpha male you or all this other stuff like that. I'd rather just kind of, I like to kind of hang out. It's both a good thing and a bad thing.
But what do you mean?
Like, I could be more ambitious at times because I enjoy hanging out so much.
Okay.
But I think that, that's kind of where my mentality of things come from with that. So I'd rather...
Have you always been like that?
Yeah, I really have. Mm-hmm. I really have. I've been like this... I mean, like, you know, my parents are pretty strict also. And like,
I'm not insinuating that it's like you just showed up here and it's like, let me be nice to people for politics. I'm just wondering how far in your history
goes. Like, I grew up, like, my parents were very strict, very, like, having me be very well-mannered and stuff like that. But I think just... I know from myself as I'm getting older, like, why, when you start being like your own self-reflective, like, why am I like this? I'm doing it because, like, that's what I'd rather have. That's rather the vibe I'd rather have in the room than stuff. I don't particularly like confrontation.
Yeah.
Like, confrontation to me is like, I go from like good time to like fight or flight. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's like, I don't have like an in-between where we can be tense with each other,
right,
yet we're having quote unquote a discussion. I'd rather be like, why don't we just share ideas in a like a more laid back way?
So I guess my other question is, since I agree with what you're saying so much, why am I so insecure and impersonal? Why do I have such a hard time talking to people?
I don't know, pal. I can't answer that question.
Could you be my therapist?
Maybe.
Okay?
Let's do it, man. Sure. Cypho, can you record those as well?
Yeah. Okay. Definitely.
All right. That's good. We'll have Keaton just sit in the room for no reason,
giving a thumbs up and smiling at all my pain. So you mentioned 30 Rock.
Yes.
Must have been an incredible experience.
Amazing.
For you.
Amazing.
Let's speak to that.
Well,
a
once
bit.
Again, it goes to the theater. The theater.
So the theater came to, from what I know about this, the 30 Rock people, casting people, came to us and said, we want some bodies to fill out. We want some actors to be the writers in the room.
Yeah.
And we recommended, or the theater recommended some people to them. And that's how you got it.
Yeah, Sean Clemens and I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the first day. And my first thing was like, all right, here you go to the set. I met Tina Fey on the first day. She shook my hand and said, thanks for doing this. And I was like, well, you know, hey, thank you. And then I did a whole day of shooting. And people were like, yeah, well, we'll see you tomorrow. You're coming back. And Sean Clemens and I turned to each other and we were like, we're coming back? Like, we're going to do this again? We thought it was like a one-time thing. And the next thing you know, it was just like Bellamy, who was the AD, was just calling us regularly. And that's where I got to know Anthony. It's where I got to know Sue. And where I got to know people like, you know, Jack McBrayer and Judah Freelander and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it just became my day job. My day job was to basically go get paid to go hang out in a set where I was treated very well and not like a usual extra, like, you know, given a dressing room with my friends, chill with my friends, and then go up on set and get to watch some of the greatest actors working today for free, or like, you know, for getting paid to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it was just like a masterclass of getting to be like, Alec Baldwin's there and you're just kind of watching him do a scene where you're like, oh, okay, cool, you know?
Yeah.
And being like, you know, helping, learning from that.
Yeah.
So, it was great. And I got to do it for like, you know, 5.5 years, I guess.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, that must have been just an incredible experience.
It was great. It was great. And I owe it to UCB, I mean.
Yeah. Did you find yourself like noticing things that people were doing and then trying them? Like, did you notice that affecting your improv in any way? Or
maybe. I mean, it's like kind of like osmosis. Maybe like a little bit more in like, I feel like an on-camera audition, maybe using some of those techniques.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And maybe a couple of things here or there, yeah, where you're just kind of like give that a whirl and stuff like that.
You definitely remind me of Tracy Morgan.
Oh, thank you, sir. Oh. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Right now, I'm slapping my bare belly for Sypha.
So, yeah, that's another thing that I wanted to ask you about. Like, what do you, so you are, you know, you've done that acting. You've done other kinds of acting work. What do you, how do you approach your acting career? How do you, like, what do I want to say here? Like, well, first of all, like, how do you take the stuff that you learn here from improvising and doing UCB stuff and apply that to your acting career? And also, just for, like, if we're, you know, there's a lot of improvisers and students listen to this podcast, but also, you know, a lot of people, there's a huge overlap, I'm sure, of people who are trying to be actors.
Right. So, like, well, if I could speak to the people that are actors that come into improv, I always found a weird complaint from when I was even a student where people would be like, I'm an actor. I don't understand these terms. And for me, like, terms that a lot of actors use, at least when I was coming up, were like, you know, super objective, objective, obstacle, stuff like that. All these terms, right? Mm-hmm. You take those terms and you just put like over super objective and objective, just put game. Boom. It's pretty much the same thing. Scratch out obstacle. It doesn't exist in our world because we are always yes anding and stuff like that.
Right.
It's then after that, it's the same thing that follows through. So for me, now I might look at a script and instead of being like, oh, what's this character's objective? I might be like, what's this character's game? And kind of go from there. And after that, one of the other great tenets of this school, of this theater, is the realer, the better. Be as real as you can be in your scenes, which a lot of people forget about and want to go and just quote unquote be funny. So that tenet's the same as the acting world as well. So it's just like apply that same tenet there when you're being comedic in a scene. Like it's almost like a challenge when you get a script now of like how straight can you play what you're being funny at and stuff like that. So I think those are kind of the things that I kind of bring to those auditions to cross over into. And stuff like that. I'm trying to think of
you did Maude Night for a while.
I did.
Right? What team were you on?
I was on Stone Cold Fox.
Okay, and not Gramps, though, right?
Not Gramps.
Will keeping up this fucking tradition while I was...
Will is definitely keeping it up.
Thank God. Yeah. Jesus. Okay. So you were on Stone Cold Fox.
On Stone Cold Fox.
You were on Stone Cold Fox from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And you're... Or...
No, I'm sorry. I was drinking
water. I mean, sorry. Not, yeah,
I was...
What I mean is from... That was the only Maude team.
Only Maude team, but here's the deal. I replaced Nate Lang. I was not an original member. Right. Nate Lang had left, and I replaced him. I think he was on the team for a year. So I've been on Stone Cold Fox since the second year.
So you, I imagine, in a lot of your sketch work, took a lot of the things that you were just talking about and applied.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess it's easy when you know that you're getting something that has game written into it.
Yeah.
You know, not like an Ibsen scene or something like that.
Yeah.
You have to kind of figure out what would the game be of an Ibsen scene?
Well, it'd be like, an Ibsen scene. Like, what's a dollhouse?
Yeah.
Like that like sort of game would be
Control My Wife.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, I'm it's not like a fun game, but it's like, I'm no longer a child. You know what I'm saying? Like,
So you were able to look at a lot of those. Did you feel like that? Here's a question.
Yeah.
Did you feel like your combined experience and training as an actor and also as an improviser gave you an advantage or made it easier for you to do sketches?
A little bit, but it took me some time to get there. I can remember my first couple of mod shows feeling a little rickety and stuff like that. Of
in
like,
what way?
Well, just kind of stylistically of what you want to get to in a sketch.
Uh-huh.
I think sometimes with sketches that you kind of, if you go in with a straight acting mentality, you're like, well, I'll play it this way. Like, this is what should happen.
Mm-hmm.
It gets a little bit like, it's a little too stodgy. So it took me a little bit of like, oh, find the funny. Play the funny.
Okay.
And kind of go from there to make it work. So okay. I think that took a little bit of exercising. I know that I just did this whole thing about like how they're so similar. But maybe there is like with sketch, maybe something you need to tweak a little bit here or there mm-hmm. to make sure that you're not totally like playing it as if it's a real scene.
Okay.
And maybe I'm being too hard on myself. But I feel like there was a couple of shows where I just felt like, if I just had to lean a little bit more towards the funny.
Uh-huh. And you feel like you're able to do that now? You feel like you've sort of settled into that?
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's pretty much what I do all the time. Read this serious scene. Let's find the funny. We got a dead body. Okay.
So you've been on Ruru for a while now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you talked about like having roles and everything potentially.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have a role in Ruru, a particular kind of thing that you do?
Sometimes.
Because improv teams can sort of be like basketball teams in
yes.
a way where you, like everybody has yeah. a position that they wind up playing.
Yeah.
Even though you always, as you said, do different things.
Yeah.
But do you feel like...
Yeah, sometimes I think that I end up grounding scenes a little bit more or end up kind of straight manning in Ruru shows. I mean, I'm aware of that, but mm-hmm. you know, I feel like when I've been kind of asked about Ruru in that sense before, and I feel like every time it's something that like I put on record like this, I'll go and do the show on Saturday, and like I'll be playing a grandma who's like, you know, naked and dancing on a
right,
table.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
With a hunchback.
With a hunchback mm-hmm. and an eye patch, and who's the best lover in the world? And you know, suddenly I'll be like, well, you know, those statements don't hold true.
By the way, that was a great connection. By the way,
oh,
you participated.
I did it.
Connection right there.
I did it.
Although I will say, you did ram every Comedia yeah. dell'arte character.
Oh, old habits.
So I have to pull my. Back a little bit.
Yeah.
You once again reverted to the mayor of Connection
yeah.
Island, even though I don't
yeah.
understand why that position would exist.
Because there was a scene about Bloomberg before. I'm still holding it over from an old improv rehearsal.
Let me ask you this question. Mm. This is kind of a personal, into your personal life a little bit. So
sure.
you're a father.
I am.
Now, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's awesome. How
Thank
are you,
you
liking it?
It's keeping me busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my question is like, are there challenges to like being a father and pursuing a comedy career and an acting career, and how do you manage that?
There are. I mean, the first thing is I have a very supportive wife who really wants. We really would love for my career to be the first thing for money and just whatever
mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. But I think after that, it's a matter of right now. It's almost like on a year basis, right? And it's 2013. And I just feel like my goal this year is just to maintain what I've done. The fact that I'm still getting to get out there every Saturday with Ruru is a huge victory for me. I'm going to do this next Stone Cold Fox show and see how it goes after that. But like, mm-hmm. if I can just kind of keep the things that I've had going and maybe add some other things on, mm-hmm. That's all you can ask for in the victory when you have a family.
Sure, yeah. Is that something, just to sidestep for a second, is that something that you've found that you've done is set goals for yourself yearly or?
Yeah, not so much in the past, but I think that you start looking when you have a family, this is for anybody. I mean, like other fathers can talk about this too. I mean, it's just like, I feel like you start being like, well, I want to make something of this, so I have to look at it that way, you know? And, mm-hmm. and I feel like this year for me is a year where I'm like, I want to maintain and I want to see if there's anything else and where it could go because, you know, it's just like, I got mouths to feed, you know? It's
yeah.
like that kind of thing, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Sure.
I mean, like even like what, like Chris Rock even said, like when he had, like when he get uber successful, he's like, when I had a kid, he's like, because I had to feed somebody, you
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So, and I was like, I kind of identify with that comment a little bit more.
You find it a motivator to you?
It's a motivator where uh-huh. you're like, you know, I mean, I just feel like I'm more focused than I have been, kind of going back of how much I like to hang out. I feel like I look now where I'm like, with the two kids, I was like, what the hell was I doing last year, man? Like, I should have been doing this,
yeah,
and this,
yeah.
man. Like, you know, like, uh-huh. and you're just like, why wasn't I doing that? And you're like, well, because fear, you know, laziness, and the yeah. aspect of like, we have forever. And it's just not saying that kids are like reminding me that you have immortality, but it's definitely something of like, where it's like, no, I need to get to work because Like, I want my kids to be able to eat. Mm-hmm. I want my wife to be happy, and I want to be fulfilled in the career that I do.
So a child is like a scared straight program.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Exactly. Without them calling you motherfucker all the time.
Say it.
But your kids probably would call you their motherfucker.
Yeah, they'd be the only ones justified in calling
you. Pretty much. Pretty much.
Sorry,
nope. Makes
That's
sense.
Why I'm not
Makes
to
perfect sense.
That's why you should talk more on microphone.
If anyone takes anything from this podcast, I want it to be that.
What is the, like, in your wildest dreams?
Okay.
Right. What's the goal for?
I would say the goal for John Murray right now, after working on a television show for 5.5 years, is to be a series regular on a show.
Okay.
I think that's really it. I mean, I feel like some of the stronger auditions I have is like sitcom material and stuff like that, and just working in that environment, I was like, oh, this makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. But what's the big dream, like, not the next step goal, but like, what's the...
My dream is really not that crazy.
Oh, that's it?
I'd love to go and like live somewhere where I could like pay for a house for my family,
uh-huh,
and like just have a work on a great show.
Okay.
And then after that, I mean, like, here's the thing with ambition is that it's never enough. Like, this is the John Murray of now talking,
right?
And then it's like the John Murray of that goal. It's almost like we should all get together again and do this podcast again,
uh-huh,
and then see what his goal is going to be from there. Because
right.
I feel like if you talk to any of our friends that are right now working on a network show, they're not content. They're looking for next things. You know, they're looking to go and work into features and stuff like that. And I think once that it's even you get into that goal of working in features, those it's then like, let's get into development, let's get into production and make our own things, or that are, you know, we can do that with our web series and stuff here, but like even bigger of like on the scale of a network show and stuff like that. So I feel like for me right now, my goal is I hopefully believe tangible. That's what I would like to do, and like, and then from there see what the next step is.
That's a great way of looking at it.
That's the only way you can, because I think if you don't, you kind of go back to me 10 years ago, kind of leaving things real broad and being like, well, nothing's happening. Where am I? You know?
That's great. Is there anything else before we go that you want to say to the listeners or the improv community, or anything else that you were fantasizing about saying when you were preparing for this podcast?
No, I think I said I wanted to get out some things for students and just try to be encouraging to them, because I really think that that's important. And I think that this podcast is great for. I hope that lots of students listen to it, because I think it's not just people pontificating about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think this podcast is great because it gives you an insight into how people learned and what they do when they work.
Mm.
And I think that that helps it make more sense to students instead of the quote unquote, like, I just want to be funny.
Yeah.
You know,
thanks for saying that. That's
no
really
problem.
Nice of you.
I think that that's what's important, and that's why I wanted to come in. So I hope that's all. I hope that I said enough of that today.
I think you did.
Okay.
This was great, John. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for having me, John.
Thank you, Sypha.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Sypha, congrats on your show. I want to say that on
Yeah. Some exciting news.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about it now, or do you want to talk about it on
a little plug?
Go ahead, Sypha.
Especially because on the last podcast, I said the wrong day. So Friday, March 29th, 7 p.m. The reason it's really 7:30 on the theater time, but for my audience, which is a hip hop crowd, I got to say a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this. I'm trying to invent like some kind of hip hop improv show, not where like there's like a lot of rapping in the show, but I want to have hip hop personalities give stories, monologues, or stuff about their life, and then do scenes from there. So I spoke to the RZA from the Wu-Tang Clan, and he said he's going to do the first show.
It's amazing.
It's awesome.
Especially because, as everybody hopefully knows, there's a huge connection between the UCB Theater and the Wu-Tang Clan.
There is?
Yeah. Well,
remind me.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, Amy and Besser are huge rap fans and huge Wu-Tang Clan
fans. Yeah, yeah, okay,
Besser wrote for or developed and wrote for a prank show on MTV called Stung.
Right.
With Method Man and Red Man.
I remember that show.
Yeah, there's like a big...
Yeah,
you know.
And I feel like that I was really... I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was trying to get... I was going to try to get Ghostface. But then I remember the RZA was telling me he wanted to do more funny stuff and comedy stuff. And also, like, I just feel like there's like this a Wu-Tang vibe. Like you, people look at UCB as like that punk rock vibe. Like I always hear the Bester talk about punk
rock.
And to me, Wu-Tang is like punk rock of hip hop, and they've crossed over obviously into become like worldwide superstars.
I think
I think it'll fit like perfectly.
I think that's part of the like why the you know the UCB are such big Wu-Tang Clan fans. And I remember like when I used to intern at the old space, I remember Besser playing Bobby Digital from before shows, and I remember like a lot of the pre-ASCAT house music was like Wu-Tang Clan, and their like solo efforts and everything. So it's great, awesome, great job, Sypho.
So
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Congrats,
I'm nervous
man.
As shit. Please come to the show.
Yeah, everybody, come to that show.
March 29th. Keaton, do you have a show you need to plug?
No.
Okay.
John, where can people see you?
You can see me on Death by Ruru every Saturday at 9. Mm-hmm. I'll be getting back into Stone Cold Fox's next show, which will be 7:30s on Fridays, starting in the end of March. I think March 15th is going to be our first show.
Great.
And I think that's it right now. I ask that every once in a while. But.
Right. All right. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to Will Hines. Thanks from Will Hines in absentia. Hopefully we'll all resolve our feuds. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
I'll check my mic again. Beautiful sunsets, Sypho, is what I wish upon you as my voice goes into your ears.
Yo, okay.
Like a Viagra commercial, or what is that? Cialis with the two tubs?
When
I speak, that's what I hope for you.
That terrible guy who not only can't fuck his hot wife, but doesn't even like being at a concert with her.
You could write like a whole like under like pinning like the true emotions of the people
it's
in those
terrible.
Ads.
Terrible. That you know the one I'm talking about, right? Where she's like at the commercial and she's like dancing and he's like and she's hot. She's like legitimately hot. And he's like, "What are you doing?" It's like drunk. Not only can't you fuck this hot woman that you're with,
you're just not into it.
You won't even like let her have fun in a goddamn concert. You rich fuck. All right, are we ready?
Rolling.
Did you record any of that? Because I would like that as a bonus feature.
Yes.